hey, welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusik Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today, we have the great Lyle Brewer. He is an incredible guitarist. He plays solo guitar. He also previously played with the band Neighbor, and he is also a professor at Berklee College of Music.
If you are listening to this podcast on Spotify or any other platform, you're going to want to head on over to our YouTube channel at Rusik Podcast. Over there, you can check out live performances with all of our guests, including the guests you are listening to right now. Give us a follow, subscribe. It helps us out a ton. We were supposed to do another episode yesterday, and five.
So I've been playing golf lately, and I've been trying to practice and get better.
He's been getting good.
Okay. I wouldn't go that far, but so I bought these little foam balls to like hit balls in my house without like damaging anything. Like the balls just bounce off the walls.
He still waxed the ever-living shit out of
these
things.
This. I've been doing this all week with zero issues. And then yesterday, before we were about to do the podcast, I hit a ball and the club hits the light above me. And a piece of glass falls down onto my head, and my head just starts gushing blood.
Oh, my God, dude.
Keep in mind, the guest that we have coming on is like five minutes away from the house. Like, you know, like I'm like texting, like, oh, yeah, great. You know, I'll see you in a few minutes. And Brian, just, like, I just hear,
in blood.
Yeah, covered in blood. Yeah.
So I went to the ER. Luckily, I didn't have to get, I guess, like, the cut wasn't that big, but I just assumed I was going to have to get stitches because, like, there was just tons of blood coming out, but I was fine. Apologies to Eliza Thorne. I will apologize again when she eventually comes.
This is
on.
Why I love Brian, though. Okay, we're sitting in the car, actually waiting to go in to see your show last night. And Brian, again, I hadn't seen Brian and Alexa in a couple hours because they had a little adventure at the ER. And Brian's like, "Yeah, it's all good. Didn't need stitches. All ended up being fine." And he's like, I learned my lesson. I'm like, that's great. We're not going to swing golf clubs in the house. He's like, no, I'm just going to take all the light bulbs out.
Take all the light bulbs, yeah. I mean,
I lost my shit, I was like, of course, this is who my best friend is.
I'll find a way.
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
I love the, like, kind of solving the problem, but also, exactly. not really.
It's problem solving.
It's just like, well, there's something wrong with my house. This is weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird that the light bulb was up there. Why would it be up there?
Yeah. Maybe we just avoid the drive.
Right. It doesn't even occur to you that it would be your fault. I love that.
Maybe we stick to putting, you know? No, full swings, dude.
Definitely
full
my
swings.
Fault. That's not my finest moment.
I love that, man. Yeah. I love that. Well, I'm glad that you're okay, and I'm glad you made it out to the show.
Yeah, it could have been my worst.
I legitimately thought you were going to show up with, like, a bandaged head today.
Well,
I was worried
they were going to have to, like, shave a spot on my head, and I'd look like a fucking idiot for, like, a month.
Like a dog that just scratches too much.
Right, yeah. Yeah. If you showed up to the gig, like, you just got hit by, like, a cannonball. freaking, like, revolutionary.
Yeah, we avoided all that. It was all good.
Glad it worked out.
Yeah, it was
good.
All fine. But
good.
Anyway.
Good.
Yeah, you were telling me on the way over here that that it's been a few years since you've been out to Nashville. What, I'm curious, because, you know, how long have you been in Boston for now? Or, like, how long has that been part of your life?
Well, I grew up in Massachusetts, and I went to school there, and then I've been there my whole life, so I guess since 1985.
Oh, there you go.
You know, but I've been in the Boston area playing for, gosh, 19 years at this point.
Oh, wow. That's got to be really fucking cool to see, like, that's got to be really cool to have that sort of intimate relationship with the place, because I have nothing like that in my life that's been that constant. Like, has it been cool to see Boston change over time like that?
Yeah, well, I think the most satisfying part is that the longer you hang in there, the larger your circle of people is, mm-hmm. you know. Because at first it was like, well, I have my guitar and I have whatever the handful of places I play, a handful of gigs I have, mm-hmm. and then, you know, year after year, it's like, okay, well, now I know, whatever, I know most of the musicians in town. I've played all the clubs. I belong to I was at the New England Conservatory, so I had that community, and now the Berklee College of Music thing, and it's like the it just starts to make a little bit more sense the farther you're into it. It feels a little bit less like you're taking a leap of faith and you're not sure what your path is. Like, your path kind of becomes a little bit clearer as you get older, and that's just something that, it, you know, people can say that when you're 21, but it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of impossible to understand what that really means.
Yeah.
So being able to belong, I feel like I'm a, you know, the comfort is that like I feel like I'm a part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's like and that's cool.
That's really beautiful. Yeah. I mean, we've only been here, what, less than 7 years now? It's just about 7 years. And we were actually having a similar kind of conversation yesterday. We were saying like, oh, like, what are some other spots, big picture, that you could imagine yourself in? And I'm sure that there are other ones out there, but there is something really beautiful. We kind of came to the conclusion of like, there's something really nice about being in a place like that, especially like Boston or like Nashville, where there is that sort of music community that you feel like you grow in, and that kind of grows with you, you know?
Right.
Like, I do think that there's something really, just really beautiful about that. But
yeah.
What would you remember the first time you came out to Nashville?
I think it was on a tour in 2008. I think about this quite a bit. Like at the time, you know, I was playing a lot of gigs around Boston, and I got my first kind of like nationally touring gig. And I remember at the time it was like, okay, you're going to go to these places and maybe someone who lives in these places will see you play. Mm-hmm. And I think about just how different it is now with the internet and how you can have a fan base and have relationships basically just on your, if you have the internet, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. So you can kind of build it that way.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you have all these ideas about like what it's going to be like. And then you kind of realize like, it's, you know, no matter where you go, it's still people trying to make music and have gigs and try to figure this whole thing out. But yeah, it was probably like all the other gigs we did where you see the club and then you go to the Holiday Inn and then,
yeah.
go to the coffee shop and, yeah. then you leave. So if it's not exactly like you're not exactly soaking up the culture, like mm-hmm. everywhere you go, just kind of the way touring works. But yeah, I had a bunch of plans to like, I initially was going to move down here and try to pursue a career.
Oh, cool.
Down here. But, I ended up, I don't know. I just, certain things in my personal life, like, it just didn't end up going that way.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the more I got kind of like into the Boston music scene, I kind of found my home there. And then I was traveling so much anyway that, it proved to be like a good like foundation, a good home base for me.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Brian and I talk about a lot. I think there's just this feeling in life that I think the more you go through it, life kind of just happens the way it's supposed to happen. And not that there's not agency, and not that you don't make the decisions that you make, and that I think that's obviously apparent in life too. But things kind of happen that the way that they are supposed to, if you believe in that kind of thing, you know. And it's, yeah. That's really, I think that's really beautiful. Like, yeah, Brian and I had no exposure to Nashville at all, really, until we came out here. Just, mm-hmm. I guess you just kind of, or you just make stupid decisions. That could also be it too, yeah. Is maybe you just make dumb decisions.
Boston's a good spot to be too. I really liked living there.
Yeah, it's like such a fun city.
It is fun. Yeah, it's interesting. Like I think about trying to like, to kind of go along with what you said, like a lot of the big decisions, it's like there were a lot of factors kind of pushing me in a certain direction. It was mm-hmm. like in high school, I didn't, on paper you could be like, okay, going to music school was like maybe not like the greatest idea you could have as far as like having like kind of job security.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the time it was like, well, it's what I'm good at and it's what I love to do, so this is the best decision I can make for myself at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like just kind of getting older, like realizing that that's if you think you have everything figured out when you make a decision, it's like it's never really going to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think about that like for my personal life. I think about that for the artistic like endeavors as well.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't some goal of just like, all right, I'm going to learn how to play solo guitar so I can do this and my career is going to look like this 20 years down the line. It was like I love this and this seems like the best idea at the time I can make.
Mm-hmm.
So when you first started gigging, was that like, was solo guitar always kind of like your main thing, or did you originally start like playing with bands and stuff? Like,
oh,
when
no,
did solo come into the picture?
Probably when I was in my early 20s. YouTube had just come out.
Okay.
And I never really heard of guys like Chet Atkins or Merle Travis or anything like that. you know, I had always loved, like, you know, I guess like pop music and roots music, and like, you know, I like Jackson Browne just as much as I like, you know, whoever. Like, mm-hmm. I like Charlie Parker and Jackson Browne probably the same amount. And I think that it was, I think it was just, I was really into it, and it was a nice, like, it was a nice pursuit. It was a nice kind of palate cleanser, because I had been in music school where the music was like really complex and complicated all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like the more complicated, the more people would like want to listen to your stuff. Mm-hmm. Like in that specific environment, I think I just got a little bit like burnt out on it. Yeah. So when I heard people like Chet Atkins just playing, you know, playing songs in the key of C and kind of using what the guitar had to offer, it was like, oh, well, that's something that is not, I feel like I could pursue this and it would be worthwhile. And just the whole, you know, I spent so much time practicing alone anyway, that kind of working on things by myself, it just seemed like a very like natural thing. But yeah, as far as like having it be my main thing, like that really didn't happen until I was like late 20s, early 30s, even kind of pursuing that as a real, as like my main thing. It was always kind of like trying to do a jack of all trades, just because I wanted to work, and I had bills to pay, and I decided that this is how I was gonna like try to like make my money. So in the early days, yeah, it was a lot of sideman gigs and just trying to make other people sound good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love complicated music can be beautiful, but there is a point in which it can start to be sort of an intellectual pursuit, as opposed to a pursuit of enjoyment almost.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm sure a lot of that is just vantage point, and I'm sure a lot of it is just the approach that you go in with it. I'm sure a lot of people can approach very complicated music, and like for me, I find when I listen to music, I'm either listening with sort of intellectual ears, trying to really understand what's going on, or you kind of flip that switch and it's like, let me just experience the thing for almost like the spirituality or whatever you want to call it, like just the right. complete sort of enjoyment of the thing.
Right.
For you, when you listen to music, is it sort of that binary for you, or can you kind of dip in and out with your ears when you like to listen to a piece of music?
It's got to create. I have to be like emotionally involved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stuff that I really connect with, you know, if it does that, then it doesn't really matter. Like all the other things don't matter so much.
That's a very good way of
putting
it.
Like what guitar is this, or what amp is this, or what? It's like, I don't really, it creates the illusion where you just, all those things are kind of pushing it in the same direction, where all the kind of individual factors like go away and you're just left with the overall impression of the art.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that, you know, it's kind of a larger discussion about like whatever, like you develop skills and then you try to use them for as meaningful and artistic outcome as you can. You know, I use that example with you know, when I'm talking to people like at the Berkeley, you know, like if you get really good, you get all these skills, and it's like, all right, well, like you know, there's whatever, there's like Luke Skywalker, but there's also like Darth Vader, and they're both like, they're both trained, right? Yeah, both like Jedis. So it's just kind of like, all right, you get the skills. It's like, do you want a red one or a green one?
Yeah.
You know, are you going to use this thing to like be kind of annoying and like show everyone how good you are? Or are you going to try to like use it to your advantage? Because, you know, like Paul McCartney is like one of the greatest musicians of all time. And like all of his musical talent, like it all went to being like great art. Mm-hmm. And there's other people who are also very talented, but it's like, I don't know, like why is that music so good and this other music is like, okay.
It's hard to, I mean, especially when you are in that like learning phase, like going to school and stuff, it's hard to, cause you're learning so much, like your instinct is like, oh, I'm going to put all the shit I learned into what I'm doing. You know,
right.
it's hard to like remove your ego enough to like,
yeah,
You want to serve the song and not the skills. Like, the highest compliment I can think to give you is, like, last night there were a couple of times where Brian and I just looked at each, because you did something on guitar, and Brian and I would just look at each other like, fucking Christ. But it always served the song. Like, it didn't, as much as Brian and I might have been like, I need to go home and practice, it never takes you out of it. It's a part of what the thing is.
Right.
And I do think it is about serving the song. And that doesn't mean, you know, you need to be really conservative with how you play or
right,
dial things back, but just serving the thing that you're trying to make. Like, I think Paul McCartney is a great example of that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also intimidating because there are people who have it figured out at such a young age. And I kind of wish that there were more people in my life earlier who had said, okay, you know, all these things, like, you're going to try and you should learn about everything, and then you probably won't have it figured out when you're like 21 or 22 or 25. You know, when I first started writing solo guitar music, when that Juno record came out, it was like, okay, I feel like everything that I've learned and I know how to do and that I've practiced is all kind of moving in the same direction,
mm-hmm.
and it's all kind of serving the same purpose. But that was, you know, I was 20. I was not fresh out of high school.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that there is a, you know, all those things are just part of your development, and you know, experimenting and trying new things musically. You know, and I try to tell kids at Berklee as much as I can. You know, as much as you want the answer right now, I'm like, this is a like. If this all works out well, like, you're going to learn 1,000 things, and this is just one of the 1,000 things, and then you're going to turn it into some art at mm-hmm. some point. But I can't turn it into art for you, and I can't show you exactly how you should use this. But if you just kind of like listen to your own muse and you keep following it, like, eventually you'll find something where it's like, okay, like, that's not Joe Pass and it's not Chet Atkins and it's, you know, and it's not Bob Dylan and it's not Jackson Browne and it's, you know, it's like this is actually something that, like, sounds like me. Hmm. And some of your influences are like, they come out through osmosis, like, not necessarily like, okay, I'm gonna play a Joe Pass thing because that would be sick because people like Joe Pass. And great. It's more like, oh, I wrote this thing and I didn't realize it, but I did this diminished chord thing that's like on that Elliott Smith song I really like.
And I think, kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, there is this interest, like, talking about through lines. I do find that if there is any through line consistent with anyone who gets to that place of being able to feel as though your thing that you are serving is your thing, and it is that amalgamation of all those different influences and skills that you've developed. It's that there are times towards the beginning of that journey where it's like you have to put on other skins. Like, I have to play like Chet Atkins. I need to put that suit on for a second. And like, and that's really interesting. I can't really think of many exceptions to that role for people. It's almost like it's innate in the learning process that you need to take on those different views, those different like embody those different characters almost to figure out what that thing is for you, and to even just point yourself in the direction of whatever that muse is. It's I don't know why that is for people. Like, I don't know why, but I feel like everyone who obsesses over music and ends up falling in love with it.
Do you think
does that?
Do you think finding that stage where you kind of become your own artist is that? Do you think that's something that you can, like, consciously work towards, or do you think that's something that just kind of comes to you on its own? Because I personally still feel like I'm in that stage of, like, learning and copying other people, and, like, how do you get there?
Well, there was an interesting interview that I was watching with where, like, a kid was asking Kurt Rosenwinkel how you find your own voice,
mm-hmm.
and he said, like, don't even worry about it. Like, just do whatever your he said two things. First thing, he was like, just try to play as well as you can.
Yeah.
And he was like, don't worry if it's your voice or someone else's voice. Like, just do whatever your version of playing well is.
That's true.
And I made the realization that's like, no one's going to be like, oh, is that like Wes Montgomery? Like, but no, it's Lyle Brewer. It's like, no one's going to mistake me for being like,
yeah,
whatever, Charlie Hunter or Wes Montgomery or Joe Pass.
Like, as much as you try, it's inevitably, it's just by definition, it's not that thing.
Right, right. I'm not, so I kind of stopped worrying about that. And then he also says something interesting. He was like, he was basically like, you should like write your own music. And that really changed everything. Uh-huh. Because I think I was in a place where, the things I was pursuing musically were entirely based on what was needed for, like, I was just accompanying people. Mm-hmm. So I was like, sound like George Benson or sound like whoever, Brad Paisley or whatever. And so I think part of the reason I started playing solo guitar and writing my own stuff is I felt like that was a necessary bar that I had to, like, I had to jump over it. I had to say, if I really have something to say here with this music, then I should be able to say it all by myself. Mm-hmm. And it should be able to stand up on its own. And not like an arrangement of some tune or, a transcription of somebody else's music. Like, and I think that really kind of, that really changed, like, the whole trajectory of my career. It was really challenging because you're responsible for everything and you're responsible for, all the creation of all the music and all the playing of all the music. But it gave me a tremendous sense of like comfort and like a sense of who I am, because, you can take all the influences away and you're, you could say, I think those records still like stand up and it allowed me to kind of figure all those things out through music. Mm-hmm. Rather than being like, what do I sound like? And trying to like quantify it in my head. It was like, no, just write and it'll take care of itself.
Yeah. I really think there is something to just like not putting too much thought into it. Like if you think too hard about like what you're trying to sound like, or, oh, I need to play more like this. Like, it just always doesn't work. That's been my strategy lately, is just like, don't overthink it.
Yeah.
Keep going. Don't overthink it.
Yeah. If it gets too far away from the writing and recording, mm-hmm, and playing gigs, then you start to ask yourself all these like really deep questions that maybe you wouldn't if you just played.
Yeah.
Because if you just made records and put them on a record and then did the next thing, it's like, I feel like that's really what you're supposed to, that's kind of what you're,
yeah,
supposed
to, that's what the job is almost. Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do. And at a certain point, it's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to it's just the farther you get, then the more records you make, the easier it gets. It's like, well, this is what this record sounds like.
Cool. And it's like sitting in the process of the thing. Otherwise, it can become almost too existential. Whereas, like, if you just stay in the thing, you're doing it. You are doing the thing. Just keep doing the thing.
Yeah. Another thing, like you said last night, you were saying there was a song you told yourself you were going to practice before you came.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember exactly what you said. You said, you didn't want to practice it too much because you're going to like psych yourself out.
Exactly.
Or something like that. And it's weird because it's so hard being a musician, because there is that thing of like, you practice so much or you think about it so much that you get in your own head and then you play worse because you're in your own head.
You psych yourself out.
Right. So it's like this thing where you have to care about it and try really hard, but at the same time, like, not think about it too much and not try too hard at the same time, it's tough to find that balance.
Yeah. Well, it is an art form. It's not sports. It's not math. It's not science. So, and especially if you're going to play in a live situation where the whole deal is that it's going to feel different from the night before, then if you close yourself off to, if you're not open to what's happening in the room, then you're not really going to be inspired. So Yeah, I think just getting comfortable with that, and also just recognizing that like you're a living human being and you're not a robot. So, and if you wanted everything to be perfect, you could just put on the records and stay home. But to actually try to go play all this stuff live, it's like, okay, like played this note. There was something that happened last night where I was just like, I just like whiffed on something. And I was just like, wow, I've never screwed that up before. And I was like, I better just get onto the next note, man. I better like, you know, whereas maybe 10 years ago, I'd be like, oh man, I'm like, like I just crack up and be like, oh, like, wow, I can't believe I screwed that up.
Yeah.
It happens.
Of all of the different types of music that I love and all the different artists that I love, I think what all of them do share is that incredible ability to be very present when they're playing and to just be completely in that, completely aware of where they are in the relationship that they have with music. And that's something that I think it's a skill you can develop on your own. It's a skill you can develop with other people. Yeah. For you, what's that journey been like in life to hone that? Like, I feel like that's something that sort of transcends music. I feel like that's a skill. And this is something that I never thought about until we started doing this and talking with a lot of people. I think that's a skill that really transcends just this thing. I think it's something it's apparent in just the way that you move through life, being able to be present and being able to, I mean, it can extend to just conversation and just being present with someone. How has that skill for you been defined over your life, and how have you gotten better at that?
Well, that's interesting. I think just trying to be more appreciative of the things that are presented to you. I remember before COVID, I thought that I was like an introvert, and I thought I was just a pretty, you know, whatever, the music I play, it's like you're all by yourself, you travel by yourself, you practice a lot by yourself. But, I love seeing people. I love traveling to new places. You know, there's this feeling that I had when I was young where you just kind of think things are going to always like be around. Whether that's, you know, there's like been musicians that I've played with and you know, whatever, like they get sick and then they pass away and you never get to play with them anymore. Or you go to this beautiful part of the country and then the club you played, whatever, a natural disaster comes and you never get to play that club again. So I think there's this idea that I have now where it's like, I don't know when the next time I'm going to be able to come down to Nashville and like play for you guys and hang out. Like, I hope that I get, you know, I get to see all you dudes like in 6 months when I come back, but I have no way of knowing that. So it's like, you better appreciate it now, you know? And also like there's, especially with traveling and playing, you know, that the amount of times that you get to have a quiet, attentive audience, you get to play your original music for people who care about it. It takes a lot of work to make that stuff happen. So if you waste all that by being like, oh, I played this C sharp when it should have been a D, it's like, well, you're kind of like, you're kind of missing the point here a little bit.
Totally.
I think just certain things become like more valuable to you as you get older. Like I want to feel good after I play too, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have the energy or it feels irresponsible at this point to like beat myself up about how I sound. Mm-hmm. You know, because like I did that to a certain point where I got good enough to play the way I want to play, and I still practice, but like I don't want to spend all that time like there's no guarantee that you play every note correctly and you're gonna have like any more fun than you would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. or that people are gonna like it more, or that you're gonna, you know, have as much energy as you would have if you just like didn't worry about it.
That's a beautiful way of framing it. Yeah.
You know, and also just like there's all kinds of things that happen in life that are like not fun. Mm-hmm. And not good that you have to deal with it. It's like, I don't want music to feel that way all the time. Mm-hmm. And also, you kind of like, you try to, at least I try to respect it as an art form. It's like, there's, like, you can't like grip it so tightly and will it to be whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Because there is such a thing of like, there's inspiration, there's, you know, you got to live in the moment, and you can't control art that mm-hmm. much.
And there's also this feeling, and this might just be me thinking in a sort of woo-woo way, but I do genuinely feel that there is a sense in which you serve the thing, it doesn't serve you. And I think that's yeah. where you get the meaning, at least for myself. That's where I get the meaning out of a lot of this, is it feels like you are in service to the thing. And it's an interesting dichotomy that's at play, because you're constantly trying, you're spending all of this time practicing, honing all of those different skills involved in being competent at the thing you want to be competent at.
Right.
But at the same time, you feel that you are serving something outside of yourself. And yes, I get immense pleasure and immense fulfillment out of doing that. But I never get the sense that music is serving me. I feel very much so that it's inverted.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really healthy thing for the ego when you right. look at it in that way, or when you come to that realization, or however you want to define it. I do think that it ties into a lot of just the way that you move through the world. And it gives you a very grounded sense of, yeah, you got to work your ass off, but again, you are serving this thing. And I right. think it's helped me a lot as a person to be able to view it from that vantage point.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the ego can be so manipulated, you know, it can be so involved. And I think that kind of detracts from what it is you're trying to do.
I imagine that like being a music teacher has probably like helped a lot with that.
For sure.
Because it's not really about you as an enterprise. It's about serving the needs of the people you're trying to teach. Mm-hmm. So that should be a little bit of an ego check.
Yeah.
You know,
it should be.
You know, it's like, you know, it can also go the other way around where you act like a, whatever, you're like a, you act like a guru or a king.
Yeah.
Which is like the antithesis of what I think teaching is.
I agree.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, the cool thing too is like, is it like, when you put out music and people have certain responses to it, it's like you don't get to tell people how your music should make them feel.
Yeah.
Like that's one of my real pet peeves is like, uh-huh. I wrote this instrumental and this is a specific,
the worst.
Specifically about this, and you should feel this way. Yeah. And it's just like, nah, dude, like just play and give it a title. And it's like, you know, there was a song last night that You Were Just a Kid. Man, I get messages about that like every 6 weeks or so. And, you know, people who are like, you know, this woman in Switzerland sent me a message, and she was like, you know, she had a 3-year-old daughter, and her daughter got sick and passed away. And she listened to this tune like when the kid was very young. And then it's like a part of her relationship with her daughter who passed on. It's like, whoa, dude, like I really do think that like by not telling people exactly how they're supposed to feel about your music, it's like kind of opens up all those different like possibilities, you know? And that's, you know, that's something I really tried hard to like protect with my own, my own stuff. And that's also like give people a chance to have an experience if they want to, and whatever. Some people are like, I like it when I listen to coffee, or like, you know, some people be like, I listen to it on Sunday morning when I drink coffee and I'm playing with my dog. I'm like, cool. And some people are like, I listen to it when my friend was sick, mm-hmm. and we were like helping them, I don't know, through their chemo treatment. It's like, okay, like you can like both. It doesn't really like belong to me anymore.
Yeah, and
it's kind of that, like, it's you put it out, and it's like it's not really about me anymore. It's kind of about whatever experience you have with it.
And whatever world and art you're dealing with, I find for myself, I'm not a fan of things that tell me what to think. I'm a fan of things that give me things to think about.
Exactly.
And that's a, again, I do think the ego is in there. It's, yeah. it's, it can be very easy to want to present something in that way. But,
See, like this is the big problem with Brian. He's got a big ego.
Yeah, exactly.
Ego control.
It is ego fucking out of control. And just record your goddamn album already. Okay. Right. Come on. Yeah. Jesus.
I'm working on it. Hopefully in the next decade or so we'll get there.
This might seem like a straight.
I showed up and Brian was wearing a cape. Yeah. I was like, bro, what are you?
But that is what I love about instrumental music too, I think, because most of the music I tend to listen to is instrumental, and I think having lack of lyrics, like you said, leaves it up for so many different interpretations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like so many people can get different things out of it.
Yeah.
Which, not that you can't with lyrics, but I feel like lyrics kind of tell you what this is about.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah.
Yeah, lyrics, I think it's almost like, I'm trying to think the best way to articulate this. Crappy lyrics, mediocre lyrics will make a great song really crappy. I think they can elevate a song in immense ways, but there's sort of less give there. If you're, you can have a beautiful piece of music that is really weighed down by mediocre lyrics. And it's very, it's less forgiving in that sense, I think. We've all experienced, listening to a song, you think, oh, this melody is stunning. But can we just let's hum the tune next time. You know?
it's tough because when you're putting out music and you're trying to get people to, listen to your music, you're saying, okay, don't listen to Nashville Skyline. Instead, listen to my tunes.
Yeah. You can only be listening to the one thing at once,
So it's like, and when you start A-B-ing stuff and, and especially with the instrumental stuff, it's like, okay, well, I started thinking about this quite a while ago where it's like someone could go, you got an instrumental trio. It's like, why should they not listen to Julian Lage? Mm-hmm. Like they can go listen to Julian Lage, who's like, got everything figured out and is like a total master, and they should listen to you instead. It's like, well, you're going to be competing with some of the greatest, some of the greatest music out there.
You're competing with everyone. Like,
yeah. So, it's like, but that's also kind of what makes you great, Cause if you can set those things as like the benchmark for songwriting, like my favorite songwriter, it's a bunch of my favorite songwriters. Like I think when I heard Elliott Smith, like to me that was like as good as it can get, And a lot of times I'll listen to my stuff and be like, okay, well, is this, it's obviously not doing the exact same thing, but that's the gold standard. Everything in here has to be here. If there's a decision to be made, you're kind of making the smart decision. People are paying attention to your records, and are you giving them the best experience possible? Because I listen to Elliott Smith records, and it's like every great thing that could be done on those records that he did. And I paid attention, the more you listen, the more he's giving, he's helping you out and giving you the best experience. So, I try not to have anything in my music that's like throwaway, and I try to all have it, it ends up me analyzing everything and trying to make it as perfect as possible. But I just feel like the standard is so high, and whatever you listen to, you listen to Elliott Smith's first records, and it's like, it all has to be there. So on all the records I've made, I've tried to kind of have that be like every bass note and every melody note and every little choice and the order of the songs and the intros and the outros. And
when you do that, is that like during the writing process or when you do you like just kind of write something and then kind of go back later and revise? Because I find sometimes I try too hard to make everything too perfect, and then like the result of that is me not actually finishing the thing.
Right. Yeah.
So for you, is it during the process or kind of more after?
I think if I get two or three sections that I'm really happy with, then the arranging process is how long should the intro be, or should there be a pickup to this, or, you know, should we take the thing that's the outro and make it the intro?
Mm. So it sounds like fine tuning in a way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's more the fine tuning stuff. Or I'll do, you know, I try to use, you know, certain techniques. Like if you write a 4-bar phrase and you really like the ending of the melody, it's like, well, can you tag the last bar? Because if you tag the last bar, then it sounds like it gives a little bit more importance like to that thing. It kind of like raises up the end of a phrase. Or like, you know, is there some kind of not obvious choice that makes the first part of the song a little bit more interesting, you know? Yeah, like that stuff usually happens like at the end.
Okay.
One thing I was curious about too. So Juno came out, 2018, somewhere around there?
I think it was, it'll be like 10 years in the fall.
Okay. So 2015.
Yeah.
When you did that, where were you at in life at that point? I mean, even outside of music, where was your mind? What got you to the place to be able to put that together?
Yeah. Well, I got, I had a pretty rough time with like alcoholism, when I was on tour, and I got sober like 10 and a half years ago. And then I feel like I didn't have a lot of things that were like in my way anymore. And I think in a lot of ways I was just trying to like start over, you know? So I think kind of making this decision to play solo, yeah, it was really just like a test to like see, to kind of see where I was at and if I had what it took, you know? And there've been certain times in my career, it was like, okay, like if I'm going to go to the next level, I should be able to do X, Y, and Z. Like if I didn't get into NEC, I wouldn't have gone to music school. Mm-hmm. It was like that in high school, I was like, I want to do this. If I don't get into this really good school, I should probably not, you know? Yeah, I think the more I kind of went down that road, the more, you kind of pick up speed, you pick up like some momentum. And I felt like I was just kind of getting closer and closer and closer to what it is that I really wanted to sound like.
Like you almost had, you could see that there was escape velocity coming almost.
Yeah. It just felt like it was just very satisfying and rewarding, and it allowed me to kind of, sort out musical things and career things, like, because it was just kind of like back where it all started, just me in a room. Like, it was all me. It was like, so, I think pursuing that record, it was a long process too, because I did it all in electric first, and then I didn't like the way it sounded, so I threw it out, and then I did the whole thing on nylon string. And then I didn't like the way that sounded, so I did it again. So the version that you hear is the third full version of the record.
That's amazing. That's wow.
So I spent a good amount of dough on that. Mm-hmm. But I think I also found some like relief in taking on all the responsibility, because I think at a certain point with music, you're kind of like, it's like any other like career ambition. You're a little bit, you know, you're just subject to the ebbs and flows of whatever like the musician market is. Mm-hmm. And I think pursuing something just for the sake of the music, and it wasn't like a career driven decision. It just felt like the right thing to do musically at that time. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to like stay as in touch with that as possible. Yeah, and I just wanted to prove to myself that I had something to say. So, the writing process was like, if you have something to say, you should be able to write 10 original songs. And if you don't, then maybe you're like not as much of a musical artist as you thought you were. It's kind of like a harsh line to take with yourself, but like, I think at that time in my life, like that's what I needed to kind of do for myself. So I guess you could be like, why are you doing that to yourself? It's like, I think I did it for myself. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yes. I mean, all the records are beautiful. I love that record. I think that record just sounds
stunning.
Mm-hmm. What is your, on the songwriting front, do you have a routine that you try and uphold for songwriting, or is it more abstract than that? How do you approach writing songs?
It kind of all starts with just screwing around in the guitar. And if there's something that I will come upon that I'll play a couple times, then maybe there's like something there. And I always try to write some kind of contrasting part. Mm-hmm. So if, well, you know, and I try to make it as, you know, I shouldn't say as different as possible, but you know, if the A section is in a major key and it mm-hmm. has a bunch of chords, and the B section, be like, all right, make it in a minor key and make it with like just a couple chords. Like, you know, mm-hmm. and I try to give myself like a couple days to sort through that stuff. And, you know, just, it's like everybody else. Like you make little voice recordings mm-hmm. on your phone, and then, I think at the same time, there is a bit of like, just like putting like your nose like to the grindstone too. Mm-hmm. 'Cause some tunes you just kind of sit there and like hammer it out, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work either. I find trying is inspiring. Just setting aside a certain amount of time playing and, I like to think about it like call and answer and trying to solve the puzzle that way. It's like you play a phrase and it's like, okay, there's probably a logical response to that phrase. And then if you can find it, then you're like, okay, well then now I have like a larger phrase. So what's the logical response to that phrase? It's like, okay, cool. And that's the A section. So what's the larger logical response to like the B section, you know? And it's not always about trying to find the most obvious answer, but it's like, if you think about it like that, if I think about it like that, I can usually get pretty close to the songs that I like to write. 'Cause that's pretty much the format with a lot of my tunes. Like I try to keep it like intro, verse, chorus, outro.
And I think one of the byproducts of doing it that way is your music is very accessible. I think even to people for whom this isn't their world, you can put on one of your records or sit down at a show like last night and be completely entranced by it and be present in it.
Oh, cool.
Because it does, I don't even quite know how to express it, but it is, I think, a byproduct of that, that it sounds, there's something incredibly musical about it in the sense that a lot of times when people, I think, tackle this kind of music, it's almost as if the melody can get lost sometimes. I know that sounds sort of like a simple thing to say, but a lot of times with that, it's you can't quite see it there.
Yeah, it becomes like guitar music.
Exactly.
Especially, right. I feel like
I love some guitar music. I mean, there's great stuff in there that I adore, but
the song can get lost in there with, you know, the guitar antics. You know,
right.
Yeah. I feel like that's something you're really good at.
Yeah, incredibly good
keeping
at that.
It about the song.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that's like that's another thing we were. Can I just stop for a second? This is like this interview is sponsored by our friends at Topo. I came in and they're like, "You want something to drink?" I was like, "No, I'm good." And they're like, "You want Topo Chico?" I was like, "Yeah."
We gotta get those Topo sponsors. The amount of bubbly water we've drank doing this thing is hilarious.
We're working on.
I'm a sucker for that stuff, so
it's great. It's great. It kind of gets back to the thing we were talking about before. It's like trying to have there be a gold standard and a benchmark that you mm-hmm. have to get over it. If you took any Beatles song and played it instrumentally on piano, it would still be good. And I'm not like comparing myself to the Beatles, like, by any stretch.
No, but that's exactly it, though. That is exactly it.
It's like, I think what I realized is, like, if you make things that are, like, kind of indestructible and just, like, very structurally sound.
That,
like,
is a beautiful way of saying
like,
it.
Like, yeah. This is the melody. Then it's like, then all the window dressing, like, doesn't matter as much. Because sometimes it's like, especially with instrumentals, it's like, well, I'm going to really, like, convince people that this is worth listening to. So I'm going to, like, I don't know, like, really ham it up or, like, whatever. And it's like, you know, if your melody was, like, really good, then you wouldn't have to push it so hard. So I think, you know, I think it's like, it's like whatever, like when you, like, reduce all the ingredients in food, then each of the ingredients has to be of a higher quality. So I think with the writing of the melodies too, I tried to be, like, as specific as possible so that they would hold. If there was no guitar, it would still hold up. I could give a piano player the sheet music and it would still be a tune. And I think that's just, it's a tricky thing with instrumental music, especially because, you know, part of the instrumentalist pursuit is, like, you go through all the different options and it's, you're constantly, like, expanding your world of what is possible. And with the writing, I feel like it's the exact opposite. It's like, you're trying to be so specific where you're like, it's not this, it's not this, it's not this, it's that. And to try to do that and also have the kind of the big technical challenge of playing solo guitar, like, those things don't always work hand in hand. So trying to, like, navigate that has been pretty interesting. One of the things I try to do is, like, I try to just play the melody and the bass line. And a lot of times that's more than enough. And, like, a little bit of, like, music, kind of like guitar talk. Like, if the melody has a major third, then I don't have to play a major third in the chord. Mm-hmm. It's going to sound like a major chord.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if the bass line is the E string, if whatever, if it's a G chord and it's G and open D, okay, well, that's half of, like, your instrument right there.
Mm-hmm. Like, God, that such a smart way of thinking about it, though. That really, really is.
I appreciate it. It's just like, but it's also a lot of trial and error.
Mm-hmm. You know? And it's almost like your mind also, as that melody progresses, your mind fills in the rest. Like your mind is participating in the thing as a listener. Your ear is participating in the thing as a listener.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's no substitute for, like, trying and having it not work out.
Yeah.
Like, there's no better thing. I mean, obviously, like, you don't want to fail your whole career. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's like, I'm like 10 years into making, like, solo albums at this point. Mm-hmm. So when I did my recent one, it was the first one where I wasn't, like, agonizing over everything. Because I was like, I've been here before, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, you know, like, all right, I want to do that song again. Like, that's a little bit too slow. Or that sounds good, but it's not working with the other thing. Or I don't like the way I played that. Or, like, that's a good take. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, it was like you kind of, you know, you just don't really, you kind of, like, don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the songwriting thing has always been super important to me. And you know, I'm not trying to be, like, the flashiest, you know, guitar player, or, you know, play more chords than anybody else or play super fast. It's like, but, like, you know, if you're really specific about your tunes and they can cross over to where maybe people who maybe wouldn't actively pursue instrumental music, and then you don't present it like it's something they wouldn't understand if they didn't play music. Like, I think that's a big thing too. Like, I never want to, like, talk down to anyone who comes to see me play. And I also don't want to be like, I'm not going to, like, tell them why they should like it.
It's like respecting the audience enough to, like, exactly. You're an adult, figure it out.
Right. And that's like, sometimes, like, in academia, it's like, you know, here's my music and here's why you should like it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, you're automatic. Like, there's no, like Coltrane didn't say that. He wasn't like, here's Giant Steps. He didn't like explain what it was on the back, yeah, on the back of it and whatever. Like, I Love Supreme. It's like, there's like beautiful, there's like, he wasn't like, this is why I Love Supreme is so good.
Yeah. It's just doing the thing. It's just living in the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of just watching artists like that, like, just put your stuff out and don't talk down to the audience and don't start off the relationship with your music assuming that people wouldn't want to listen to it. And that's a little, it's not the same as thinking like people should listen to my music since it's instrumental. It's like, it's very possible that you might want to listen to this, mm-hmm, but if you don't, then I understand.
Again, good way to think about it.
Right, like, I try to be very polite. Like, I should probably not be so polite. That's probably not the best mission statement of, like, if you want to listen to it, great, but if you don't, I completely understand.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to ask you about, which we kind of talked a little bit again on the drive over here, but your departure from Neighbors, that whole kind of thing happening right now.
Yeah.
What first of all, what was that experience like, just going through that chunk of your life?
It was an awesome
get out of that. Well, how's it been feeling?
It was an awesome experience. Mm-hmm. It was a really great experience. Our keyboardist and like lead singer of that band, we actually like grew up playing music together. We called the band Neighbor because he actually grew up like right next door to me.
That's beautiful. Oh, that's, wow. I had no idea. That's so cool.
Yeah. God. So I've been, you know, we both, you know, I met him when I was like five.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's and beautiful. That's so great.
It was a really cool experience, man. I had a great time playing with those guys, and we wrote a bunch of tunes together. And one of the great things about that is, like, you know, I've had so many people say that they wanted to write lyrics to my instrumentals, and it's like it's never really quite happened, you know. But me and our keyboardist, like, we would write a lot of songs together. I would have little ideas and hum them into my phone, and he would write lyrics. And it was also just the experience, especially with the group of fans who would come see us. There was a really like dedicated fan base, and that was a nice change from the solo guitar stuff. The solo guitar stuff is, you know, there's a lot of going like this, and there's not a lot of going like this, right? Mm. So, having like, you know, feeling like you were a part of something that was like greater than you. I think that's one of the potential pitfalls of playing solo, that you can just kind of become like, you can almost like think too much about your own music and your own playing, that you kind of become too self-involved and you lose mm-hmm. perspective. And mm-hmm. that thing, it was just kind of like, bring me back to like, okay, like it's a blues.
Yeah.
Like it's a blues in E and improvise and like
something pure about that, being able to just, yeah.
Yeah. It was super fun, and it was a blast. And also, like, I love to improvise too, you know? I think my departure from it was, you know, it was like a number of things. I think one of the things was just trying to spend more time with my kids, you know, and just realizing that they're not going to be kids forever. You know, my older son is 14, he'll be 14 in a couple months. And then I have like two other kids. I have an almost 3-year-old, and Isaiah was born just like, he was born like January. So, yeah, you know, just trying to be around for them more. And I think also just trying to figure out like how to have the relationship with music that I want to have, you know. And trying to do Neighbor and Berkeley and my solo stuff. And I teach outside of Berkeley too on Patreon a bunch. And I think that it was like, I could do it, but I didn't feel like I was doing the things well that I really wanted to do well, you know.
Like spreading yourself too thin.
Yeah, it felt like that at certain times. But you know, as far as the departure goes, like the guys were very understanding, and They really helped me get. They gave me like a really nice send off in Massachusetts, and the fans were wonderful. And yeah, so I wish those guys like all the best. Like, and they're still like really close friends of mine.
How I'm always very interested in how people who do this for a living, and this can manifest obviously in a lot of different ways. Like you just said, I mean, being a musician isn't one thing. It's that's your whole identity in a lot of ways. How that interplays with being a parent, and obviously there's, you know, you're in an interesting spot because you work at Berkeley and you have that as well, which is beautiful. How has being a musician interplayed with being a parent in your life? Or is it just that's your job and you don't even you kind of segregate them in that way?
That's an interesting question. I guess it depends. It depends if it's going well or if it's not going well. Because if it's going well, it's just like great. And then if it's going well, it's like, oh my God, like what did I do? Mm-hmm. You know. I've been thinking about this idea recently, like keeping the demons at bay. Mm-hmm. I have to make a certain amount of dough just to like feel secure. You know, if the utility bill comes in and I can't pay it, like the fact that I'm a musician is like not enough to like comfort me.
Yeah,
like,
it's not relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like, well, no one cares, dude. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You need some money. It's like I said before, it's like a lot of trial and error, man. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of trying to figure out, you know, that you need multiple things in your life to be a happy person. And the things that make me feel secure and happy and also excited are not the same as somebody else. You know, I know people who spend a ton of time on tour and they have kids and they have great relationships with their kids and they feel okay. And then I know other people who, like, you know, there are people who teach at Berkeley who are like not super happy that's what they do. They want to be out playing gigs. So I think it's all just like evaluating where you're at and how you feel and what's right for you, but also considering what's right for your family as well. It's a good thing for me to have other things to worry about besides what I'm doing and what is going to satisfy my own needs. Cause it helps keep me like in perspective about certain things. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of given me a sense of community with other parents. It's helped me like kind of understand my own upbringing more. It's helped me get more perspective. It's helped me like lighten up about certain things. You know, I can't practice 6 hours a day like I used to, but that's probably a good thing for me at this point. Like, what am I going to do for six? I don't even know what I would do for 6 hours. Like I don't want to practice for 6 hours. What's cool is that it allows you to have a bunch of new experiences and in some ways, like you get to see things that you thought you knew like you get to kind of see them for the first time. Like I went to elementary school, but it's a much different thing when your kid goes to school and they draw a picture and you hang it on the fridge. Like it's pretty cool, man. And it's mm-hmm. a really big part of being a person. And to me, it was always like what I wanted like to do. So, you know, I also didn't want to have a job where I felt like I was like trapped in this thing. And I didn't want to like, you know, I didn't want to spend all my time, you know, it's kind of like whatever. I always kind of wanted like a bohemian, like counterculture existence. And I also don't want to be on the street. Mm-hmm. So trying to have a balance of that is interesting. But like, you know, I've been able to, you know, carve out a really nice balance of everything. But it's, you know, it's taken some time. And it's always like an adjustment, you know, because whatever, I'm on this new solo guitar touring thing and you just kind of take a guess. It's like I was working with my agent and I was like, okay, I think like 30 shows is good. And he's like, cool, you want to do 30 shows? And I was like, yeah, I think. And then at the end of the year, we'll like figure it out and maybe that's the right number and maybe it's too many or maybe it's not enough. Mm-hmm. But just trying to get an idea of like what it would look like, and right now it's like okay, play on some weekends and play a handful of gigs around Boston and teach, and you know, the majority of days I get to freaking like put my kids to bed. It's awesome. It's fantastic.
Nice.
In terms of your relationship with music, when are you the most fulfilled? When do you find the most happiness?
Probably when I write a new song and it's all done, because it just makes everything feel like it's like brand new.
Yeah,
you know, it makes you feel like very in the moment, and also just there's that thing of like it wasn't there and now it's there.
Yeah, I tell my students this a lot. I think that one of the most difficult things with art is going from nothing to something.
Yeah.
And there's many ways in to do that. There's many different approaches that one can take to try to. And a lot of it, I think, is just not getting comfortable with your routine and trying to almost trick yourself to be able to do that in many different ways. But art is incredibly difficult because you are going from nothing to something.
Right.
And it's making that leap. And when you do that, that magic is there and you think, that's what it is. That's what I love, is that jump from nothing to something.
Right. An interesting thing to, like, navigate for me has been the idea of like pretending it's good before you know it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
To see whether it's good. It's kind of a weird thing, you know.
I know, like, exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Like I'll have this melody, I'm like, I think this is it. So then I'll be like, okay, like, well, like, let me like really think about this. And then let me play it and then play it as if I really believe in it. And then see if I believe in it.
No,
it's like a weird, you're like dancing with these like musical ideas. Mm-hmm. You're just like, I think you're the one.
It's almost like what we were talking about earlier, where you like have to put on that skin. You have to just try it. You have to see like,
right.
Wait, is this, what right. is this like? Yeah.
Right. Can I just say something about putting on skin?
Yeah.
I find that expression to be kind of okay, gross.
Put on the hat, whatever you want to say. Yeah.
Skin, dude. What's your, it's freaking gross.
Okay. Never mind. We're never having Lyle back. Damn it.
It's like this time I put on this, like, who puts on skin?
Okay, that's, all right, that's fair.
That's a red flag there.
God
Casey.
Damn it, okay, well, you're
it's
right.
It's kind of like when you're in a new relationship, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you meet someone at a bar, you're like, oh, like, mate, let's go out, whatever. And then you're like, is this a real thing? Mm-hmm. Like, do we have enough of a, you know, because you spend this time, you're like, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's cool. And then, it's cool how I made fun of your analogy, and then I just made this really crappy analogy too.
Man. No, but I totally get what you're saying, though. It is you have to almost like you have to almost play through the process. Like, there's no substitute for that. You need to just play it out, and there's a bit of putting on in the sense that you just need to like commit to the thing and see
right.
Where, how does this go? And that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you need to go, if you're writing a melody, that you need to, I do think maybe you need to go all the way with it. You do need to kind of just sit with it and treat it as though it is the greatest thing you've ever written.
Right.
But then you know if it is or if it isn't.
Right. But, well, I also have the East Coast, I have like cynicism out the wazoo.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say cynicism. I'm like very like skeptical.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, if I write something that I know isn't good, I'm like, I could do better than that, mm-hmm. you know? But at the time it's like, well, like, let me just like present this as clearly as I can and see if I like it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just like, I wrote this tune the other day and it took like 3 or 4 days. And the song like didn't, if you listen to the 4 demos, like it didn't really change that much. But like on the 4th day, it's like, yeah. And now I know how it goes. And a lot, and whatever, like the chords are kind of in the same spot and the melody's kind of the same, but this idea of like you're playing the beginning, like you know it's the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And okay. I'm like, yeah, this is this right, because I can see the whole thing in my head, and I know what's going to end up here. So this is why I'm playing this one note at this spot. And it's like you kind of can't like you can't really do that on day one. So you try to kind of see if things actually fit and if it's structurally sound enough to where you don't have to achingly try to remember what your melody is. It's like, well, if it's that, then maybe it's not that good in the first place.
You're almost like faking familiarity with the piece until you have the familiarity with the piece. But there's no substitute for that familiarity with the piece. Like,
right.
But you kind of need to toy with it until you actually get there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of those things like take, it's all happening at the same time. Because other classical, you know, classical guitar music, it's like some dude would like write it for a month and then another person would like figure out how to play it for a month and then they would practice it and then they would work on interpretation. But I guess when you're doing it all yourself, it's like all those things are happening simultaneously. So like just getting used to that feeling, because whatever, if something doesn't go right away, you know, maybe in my 20s I would be like, well, that's because this idea is not good and that's why it's not if it was good it would be working right now. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, it's kind of like, all right, buddy, like
probably you. Yeah.
It's probably like, why don't you just like calm down?
Yeah. I'm another thing I wanted to ask you about was who are the guitar players in any style of music at the moment that are inspiring you? Who are the people out there that you're really digging?
Ooh, guitar players. That's a good question. Well, there are, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, I end up kind of going back to all the classic stuff, you know, whether it's like Chet or Joe Pass or Wes Montgomery. You know, certain records have really kind of, I feel like I've just, I can't stop listening to them. Like, I can't stop listening to, like, you know that record, Neon Skyline?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, I listen to Andy Schaaf, like I listen to that, like, I listened to there's a song on there, one of those tunes. I listened to it like 10 times in a row the other day. Mm.
It's been a minute. I need to throw that on. Oh man.
I've never heard that.
Man.
Check it out.
You know, he's not instrumental. He writes great lyrics, but there's just like, there's something about those records that is just like, I feel like I feel like he wrote them like just for me. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that that's just like, and it's not like the flashiest, most like technical music ever written, but it's
arranged
like,
so well.
It's arranged so well. And yeah. All the melodies are like so like on the money.
Yeah.
And it's like I was saying earlier, it's like everything cool that you could have done with that record, he did. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you pay attention, he's just like, he takes care of you as the listener. It's just like every little lyric and everything is just like so well placed that like, I listened to that record like a lot.
He's also a really diverse guy. He can cover a lot of ground. I mean, his material is, spans a lot, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and it's all very like potent.
Yeah, that's a very good way of saying it.
Because he'll write a song with like 25 words, and it's just like, and it just like knocks you out. You're like, dude, where did that even come from? Like,
that's awesome.
And he's got this like, he's just got such a like a smart, cool way of saying things. Like, there's a song, I think it's called like "Come On Baby, Try Again," and it's got this lyric where there's this whole like setup with him and his ex-girlfriend, and then you know it lasts like 7 or 8 tunes, and then they finally meet at the bar, and then he's got he's got this line in there where he thinks that this woman kind of came back to try to get back together with him, mm-hmm. and it's like the lyric is something like, she grabs like holding my coat. And I, you know, and she says, like, I've missed this. And he goes, yeah, like, I missed you too. And she goes, and then she laughs and goes, actually, I was talking about your coat. And it's just like, whoa, like, where did that come from? It's so like, I can, like, it's like, the imagery is like so deeply
it's so clear.
Burned into my brain. And it's such like an interesting way of talking about a situation that it's like, it's like my imagination just goes wild when I hear stuff like that. And it's like, and that has nothing to do with like guitar or harmony or finger picking or whatever. So when someone's like, you play finger style guitar, it's like, yeah, but I feel like I'm after stuff like that or stuff where it's like, I know, like I've heard some of this before, but why do I feel like I'm hearing it for the first time?
There's almost a familiarity with it. You almost feel like, it's almost like deja vu in a weird way.
Yeah. 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 And so I've been, you know, I just, there's something about that that just really gets me excited. So
that's awesome.
I've been writing some tunes and trying to have some like little like surprises like that. Like,
oh, that's cool.
Like in my tunes, or just trying to get, you know, like I listen to that dude's music and I'm just like, if I could write something like that's like 1/10 as cool as that, then I'll be happy.
I think you're getting there. I think you're
well, on I'm the working right. on, well, I have, you know, that's my, you know, my whole thing is like don't quit, don't die. Mm-hmm. I haven't quit and I haven't died yet. So
what direction are you pointed in right now? Like what's on the horizon musically?
Well, I got a new record, and that's coming out in the fall. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to do a release tour around that. I've been writing a handful of tunes. I wrote this like, I was kind of screwing her. I tried to write like a Jerry Reed type tune.
Oh, nice.
And it's just like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's like a dominant seven kind of a thing. And like, it's got some, I don't know, like jazz licks and jazz chords, but like, I don't know, the record I'm putting out in the fall, it's definitely more, it's kind of more the, you know, kind of somber kind of a thing. So I don't know. I'm trying to write as much as possible. I think I have like two or three tunes.
That's killer.
But I don't really, like, it hasn't taken shape in anything yet, but.
What's the most exciting part almost, you know, like when you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a. Yeah, to me, I think that's one of the most exciting parts about doing this is you don't quite know what happens next, you know.
Yeah, if you try to will it to be something, then it's, you know, it's probably not going to be that, and the art is probably not going to be that good. Mm-hmm. I mean, like at least that's the way it works for me. I know some people can be like, I'm going to do this, and then they go do it. It's never kind of quite been like that for me. But yeah, just trying to stay inspired and get the little thing where you feel like you're moving in some kind of direction. And it's like you get one little song and it's done and you're like, dude, it's like the best.
Yeah. I will say I've been kind of ignoring the songwriting aspect for, probably too long now, but I think you've inspired me to pick it back up.
Yeah. Oh, good, man.
Next time you come to Nashville, he's going to have a full solo album of just original tunes.
Well, I wouldn't. We'll see what happens.
Well, Brian is like an outstanding guitar player.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the writing is hard, man.
Yeah.
It's hard, and then you got to kind of stand there and, like, deliver, and you know, it's... you know, and it's funny, it's like, even if you get, you know, like you're a very, you know, you could play like anything that you like put your mind to, you know, and
but that's, to me, that's like an entirely different thing than than the writing.
Yeah, you know, just
but
like one day at a time, dude. Yeah. One day at a time.
I'm gonna work on it.
Yeah, like,
there we go.
That is one of my goals, eventually put out a solo guitar record. But
in some ways, it kind of like takes the pressure off. It's like there's a lot of, you know, it's a big undertaking. But I felt very, I feel like relieved when I put out original music, because it's just like, it's a nice little like cap on, or I don't like having something to say and not be able to say it.
Yeah, because like, then it's done. It's like out there in the world.
Yeah, it feels good. It's like a relief. And also it's just like, and for me, it's like, I want to stay in it. I want to stay in whatever the creative process is. And it's not the only thing in my life, but like, it's a big part of how I experience things. And it's really important to me and it makes me feel good. So, right. You know.
Oh, well, one last thing I want to ask you too. How'd the Carter thing happen? Because you're going over there tomorrow, I think, to shoot some stuff with them. How'd that all transpire? That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it. My agent knows the people over there, and they said, hey, can you have this guy come in? And they said, absolutely, sure thing.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, and I've kind of made the, I made sure that I could, like, play my original stuff. You know, like, I've done a lot of demos where it's like, you know, like, here's a 62 Strat, and you play some hot licks on it. And that's cool, but I'm kind of on this solo guitar thing. So yeah, I think I'll do a couple of my original tunes, and they'll probably let me play a guitar that's worth like a bazillion dollars.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you know what guitars you're getting to play, or is it just you show up and it's going
to
be...
Do you get to decide, or do they pick for you, or you
I
don't know?
I think they pick.
Oh, okay.
I think they pick. You know.
Well, that's exciting, though. That's awesome.
Yeah, it'll be fun, man. I'm hoping I get like a free shirt or something.
I'm sure they'll give you a shirt.
I don't know. Lucky guitars that'll get to be played, so, you know.
Oh, come on.
Well, no, I mean, again, not to just blow smoke up your ass, Brian and I, we say it many a time. I mean, we both think you were just one of the best guitar players on the face of this earth. So this is so cool to have you in here and be able to pick your brain about a bunch of random stuff. So,
well, the best part of this gig is getting to meet guys like you and getting to like meet young people who are excited about music and get it. It's like I was saying, you know, it's like I said last night, it's like, obviously, like you guys are not my actual kids, but it's like, it's being able to like be a part of the journey of young people as they figure out music and what it means to them and getting to know other guitar players and that, you know, we have so much in common. It's a really beautiful thing and it's a really wonderful experience. And it's great to see you guys doing well. And you know, like, whatever, like, watch you guys develop and hopefully be some part of the thing that helps you get to where you want to go. And maybe you can avoid some of the mistakes that I made in my early 20s, too. So, yeah. And you know, just talk about music and have fun.
Hell yeah. Well, we really appreciate it a lot. It means the world. So, we're so glad you got to come in. Yeah. This has been fun. So.
Yeah, man.
Awesome.
Sick.
Nice. Guys, we did it. There we go.
Thank you, Lyle.
Guys, that was great. That was so much fun.